Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, and today's conversation is with Rodney Bent. Rodney's on the professional staff of the House Appropriations Committee, and joining us in our conversation is Jonathan Brule. Well, Rodney, let's talk about managing the fund in this section. The supplemental was set up to fund 10 priority areas. Could you talk to us about some of the key areas, and what was the strategy in terms of what to focus on first and prioritize?
Sure. The supplemental had, as you say, about 10 areas, 60 line items, as we would call them, with things like training police or building electricity or electricity transmission. When the president requested it, the focus was clearly on what I'd call hard infrastructure, dams, power projects, that kind of thing. What changed a little bit while I was there is that, first in the middle of November, there was the announcement that we were going to give the Iraqis back sovereignty on June 30th, which meant that people suddenly started focusing on democracy and elections and all the things that go with democracy, things that we take for granted here, like organized political parties, a responsible media, a way of getting the message out. There, you know, you have dozens of parties. You have every tribe, every politician in some sense sort of mobilizes, and the media is just almost a cacophony of print and radio and TV. So it was, we clearly needed to put more money into helping Iraqis pull together what they were going to probably do anyway, which is organize themselves into competing groups, if you will.
We've talked about how the fund was set up to be as flexible as possible, given the ever-changing environment in Iraq. Can you give us some more examples of when priorities changed and just how that changed the projects that were being funded?
Sure. Well, I should be distinguish a little bit. The request would have had the fund be as flexible as possible. I think the Congress, when they reviewed it, said, well, we'll give you essentially what you want, but we want to make sure you're going to spend the money as you say you're going to spend the money. And so they put restrictions on how you could move it around. In other words, they wanted to make sure that if you said you were going to train a certain number of police, that you really trained a certain number of police, that you didn't move that to a different area. I think that trade-off between flexibility on the one hand and accountability and oversight on the other, it's kind of a creative tension, if you will. It forces people to decide what's important and to think about, if they want to move funding, you know, what it is that they're going to be doing. What are you going to get if you move the funding?
How did you provide for that accountability? I mean, there wasn't a large tracking system in place.
not compared to what we have back here, no. Congress required quarterly reports, the first of which I worked on when I was in Baghdad, that came back. It was well over 100 pages. It went through each of the major sectors, each of the line items, if you will, and we talked about vocational training, microcredit, education, water, electricity, you name it, and explained what we were going to do with the money and how we the periodicity, the quarters by which we were going to do the spending. I think in some ways it was a good system. It was a useful discipline for thinking about what we wanted to do. And because the report is quarterly, you can change it over time. You can say, heck, you know, this is now less important than we thought it was 3 or 6 months ago. We need to spend a little bit more on another sector.
Tell us some more about the challenges inherent in managing such a fund. For example, how do you go about just estimating the cost of funding a project?
Sure. That's a good question. The starting point was always working with the Iraqi ministries on what they wanted. And so, for example, if you were working in the water resources area, and that's hugely important in Iraq in a way that, you know, here you might think, oh, well, that's sort of water, that's good. But there it's dams, it's irrigation, it's canals, it's you know, essential to the functioning of the Iraqi economy. And so the senior advisor for water resources would work with the Iraqi Ministry of Water Resources. They'd come up with a series of dams, canals, irrigation projects, and they would put a price tag on it. That price tag or that series of that project would go over to the project management office within CPA, and they'd look at it and they'd say, well, how good are the estimates? They tended to add funding for uncertainty. You know, was it, had it been engineered out, they added money or they added a cushion, if you will, for security costs. And so a project that might start off costing a hypothetical $100 would cost $125 or $140, that same project, when it was looked at by the PMO, not because the project itself had changed, but because they wanted to build in ranges for uncertainty. And the cost would change again when the actual contractor construction company looking at it got in there and could say, oh, well, you know, we don't have a road. We can't get this particular piece of equipment. We'll need to do something different here. So all the way through, there was kind of a almost a loop in which you'd start with the Iraqi ministries, go to the PMO, and then as they call it, task orders get written, and the construction firms begin looking at things. So
give us a sense of, as earlier you talked about, just sort of the different things that are going on. As you were describing developing the price estimate for the Iraqis for the first part of that, I just began to think about data collection and how that's done in an environment that's very different.
Well, good point. We were always operating in a like being a ship's captain, where you don't have radar and you're not entirely sure where you are. For example, when I got to Iraq, the common estimates of unemployment or underemployment were sort of in the 50% to 60% range. When we left, the Ministry of Planning, which was responsible for pulling together the statistics, said, well, they kind of reckoned the unemployment rate was, you know, around 20%, and the underemployment rate was about 25% to 30%. So, but how did they get those statistics? Where did they come from? How good were they? How were they, if you will, annualized? All of that was sort of a work in progress. So you were, we were forever hoping that we'd kind of gotten the basics right without really knowing if we had.
And also, how do you manage? There's multiple sources of money. So we have multiple projects and multiple sources of money. I can't help but think about duplication and just accounting. All that. How did all that work?
Well, I think the primary emphasis was on getting stuff done. And so if you were working with the Minister of Electricity on power projects, you clearly had a finite set of projects that you were dealing with, and whether those projects were going to be financed by Iraqi resources, by the Development Fund for Iraq, or by the supplemental, you clearly talk about it. And you could work out that part of it. But the follow-on part, and this is where I think the advantage of having people who'd worked on budgets was important. The real question was not could you build more power plants or fly-in generators, if you will. It's the fuel for those generators and the pipelines and whether you're going to use treated crude or whether their refined product was available. Those are the kinds of follow-on questions that we were struggling with. And because I think the Iraqi body politic had been so dominated by Saddam and by the Ba'athist Party for 35 years, there wasn't a it was a top-down process. And so people were just used to getting orders and essentially following them without really talking about the dynamic. And so, you know, it was a little bit Stalinistic. I mean, if the Minister of Electricity was told, build power plants, he'd build them. That didn't mean that the Minister of Oil, for example, knew that he therefore had to supply, you know, how many thousands of metric tons in order to fuel those power plants. And that's the kind of give and take that, you know, we were sort of working towards, bringing that together. That was part of the challenge of the Program Review Board and part of the challenge of my job and certainly that of Ambassador Bremer.
Was it hard for these folks who had not operated under that sort of system of learning and collaboration to get to that point?
Well, yes and no. I mean, there's clearly because of the, you know, the back and forth in Iraqi society, you know, a real tendency to talk about everything. On the other hand, you know, I think they were so used to following orders, there was sort of that tension. One of the things I'm proudest of was a moment in the Program Review Board, which used to look at all of the spending proposals. And we had the Minister of Finance had always been a member of the board, but we succeeded in getting the Minister of Planning to come on and the Board of Supreme Audit to look at it. And I began to have ministries that wanted to do projects like the Ministry of Electricity come in and give their proposals essentially directly. And then the Minister of Finance, or really his staff, would challenge, well, what about this? Did you consider that? And it was really great. I mean, you could sort of see essentially how people were arguing and over actual spending. They had some control, some empowerment over what they were doing in a way that, you know, would have been inconceivable 5 years before.
Ronnie, who comprised the members of the Program Review Board, and how did it sort through all the competing demands?
Sure. There were probably 10 or 11 different groups represented on the Program Review Board, Australians, the the United Kingdom's Department for International Development, members of the CJTF-7, which was the multinational force, if you will, various members of CPA, and then obviously the Minister of Finance, and then, as I say, we succeeded in getting other Iraqis to participate in the meetings of the board. It would meet once a week, typically Saturday mornings, but there would be staff meetings. There was a lot of interaction back and forth. We'd put the minutes up on the web so that if you had access to the internet, you could at least see what was there. We arranged for translators to be there to make sure that we were really having, you know, full and open consultations.
That's a fascinating point. When the funds were provided for our quarterly reports were prepared, as Rodney's described, he's been one of the people who've been there when the first reports were prepared, and now he receives them on the Hill. We'll ask him what it's like to review this reporting requirement from both sides when the Business of Government Hour returns.